So my guest this time is John Wellwood. John is a psychotherapist, a teacher, and an author of 8 books. He's been a pioneer in integrating psychological and spiritual work for the past 30 years. He has his PhD from the University of Chicago, and he has written 8 books on relationships, on embodied presence, which is our topic today, on awakening. And I think your most recent book is Perfect Love, Imperfect Relationships, Healing the Wound of the Heart. Is that right, John? Is that your most recent book?
That's my most recent, yeah.
Great. Well, we're going to be talking about the power of embodied presence, and you are an expert in that field. You give workshops on that topic. So my first question is, what the heck does that mean? What is presence, first of all, and then yeah. What does embodiment mean?
Well, presence, very simply, to keep it very simple, is being where you are. that's the simple definition of presence, being where you actually are. And, you know, most of the time we're not where we are. We're in our mind, we're ahead of ourselves, or we're behind ourselves, or we're somewhere else. We're planning, we're ruminating on the past, or we're planning on the future, or we're reacting to something that's going on, but we're actually not present in our body. So embodied presence would be being where you are in the body as an experiential. The body not just as flesh and blood. I think that's what we call the outer body, the gross body. The body we look at in the mirror becomes an object. But the body as experienced from within, which is, becomes the subject, it's like being in your body. It means feeling your body from within. And the body is a field of experience and wisdom, actually. I see the body as a portal to presence. It's a very direct, it's our easiest way to become present is by becoming, actually entering into the experience of being in the body.
There was a novel that began something like George lived a short distance from his body,
right.
And
yeah.
I think that's certainly been my experience a lot of my life, of sort of waking
exactly.
up in the morning and being in my head and going to my computer and
yeah.
and thinking of the body as just this vehicle to carry my head around.
Exactly, and it's like we've all, especially men. But if I say all people have developed a kind of dissociation from the body. I mean, it's a long history in our culture, actually. The body has been looked down on in our culture for thousands of years as the lesser, as kind of the lower part of ourselves. And it's also a place where we feel pain. So as children, and we feel helpless and overwhelmed by things that we can't deal with as a child. And so we learn very quickly. And our culture encourages us to go upstairs into the head and into the control tower of the mind and operate this control tower upstairs and get out of that body, because this is a place where we feel pain and things that we can't handle as a child. So
we also feel pleasure in our body. So
yes.
So that can even become addictive, of going out and trying to seek pleasure in one way or another.
Right,
Is that a way of returning to the body in some way?
It's a way of trying to, yeah. I mean, I think sex is one of the great ways of actually coming back fully into the body, but then it also becomes, as you say, an addiction if it becomes something we're grasping onto, then we're actually separate from it. We're not in the experience. We're trying to control it, or we're trying to grasp onto it, which keeps us separate from it.
And how does control factor in? Because we have a certain amount of attention, and that can be given anywhere, but we are trying to control something. Men get controlling. Is that
right.
Another way of trying to become more embodied?
No, I don't think so. I think control is the other way around. It's like going upstairs and being above it all. It's not wanting to be subject to. You know, the word subject is very interesting, because subject means you're actually present as I, as self. But we don't want to be subject to the world, to our feelings, to our situations that we don't have, control over. We want to have a certain kind of power that comes from being able to control our life and our feelings and other people. So it's a very alienated kind of way of being, actually. But it's a way that feels that seems to feel safe. It creates the illusion of safety.
Just like call it an illusion of safety.
Yeah.
Why is it illusionary then?
Because it's not really safe. Because when you're working from control, it's kind of like the war on terror. You know, the war on terror is designed to make us safe, but it's actually making us less safe because we're creating boogeymen all over the place, and then we feel more scared. So the more you remain in the control tower, the more you have to kind of keep things at bay. And those things that you keep at bay become things that you're actually afraid of, and that you never deal with the fear because you're always trying to control them and staying on top of them and staying in command, set position. And therefore, we never really deal with it. And so it becomes something we're always kind of having to fight off. Like, so the war on terror becomes this endless war that goes on and on and on against all these enemies that appear to pop up all over the place.
And I think a lot of men are experiencing their life as kind of a war on their life, or the war in their circumstances.
That's right. It's tragic, you know, because life's not meant to be that way. Life is beautiful and joyful, and it's about love, really, joy and love and peace and beauty. And that's what we, as men, I think in our traditional roles as warriors and soldiers and hunters, of course, we tend to become conditioned to that state of war, actually. War against our body, war against ourselves, war against the planet. You know, I think that's part of what we're trying to unwind from right now. It's like, how do we love the planet and support the planet? Otherwise, it's not going to be here for us much longer.
So when men get prepared for war, they're toughened up by their fathers and their teachers in sports and school and then into the business and business community and jobs, and we're supposed to be tough, but that toughening up you'd think would be sort of like gladiator training. It would bring you more into the body. No,
because it's up. You know, I think the word up and down is very important here. Toughening up, tightening up, uptight. We're uptight, we're toughened up, which means, again, up into the control tower, up into the disconnected mind. And the term I use often is the disconnected mind. I think the world, sometimes I say we all live in a totalitarian system, and I'm not talking about politics, but I'm talking about the control system of the disconnected mind that's operating on our planet. And all the people who are really in charge of the world and the countries of the world and who are making all the decisions are really very disconnected people. They're working in their mind, they're not living in their body. And these decisions are being made, economic and environmental decisions are being made from the disconnected mind, and they're not connected to nature, they're not connected to the body, to the heart, to the soul, to the spirit. And so the decisions are continually destructive and not serving life. And so that's what I think the urgent need right now for a new paradigm for men is to come down out of the disconnected mind, out of the control tower, and meet life more on the ground level, which means really coming down into your body, into your heart, into your belly. You know, belly is the opposite, really, of the control tower, the very grounded body, which in the belly center is very powerful. It's been the power, you know, in the Japanese tradition, there's a great tradition of developing the belly center, and the sumo wrestlers, you know, for example, the sumo wrestlers are very developed in their belly, and they all practice from the belly, and the martial arts are always practiced from the belly. Those are embodied ways of actually being strong men. But I think today we have this very disconnected mind, which is actually creating a very weak kind of male, but a very kind of toxic male that's disconnected and making decisions that are very unbalanced and unintegrated and don't work on our planet, and they're actually very toxic to the planet.
Well, a lot of men, you know, work out to build their bodies, keep their bodies vital and healthy.
Right.
Does that develop the same kind of center as the martial art belly center, or is that a different kind of embodiment?
There's nothing wrong with working out if you like you working with weights, and that's great. But that's not the same as what I'm talking about in terms of embodied presence. The tendency, I think the danger of working out, and I'm not criticizing it in general, but I think the danger in it is you start to relate to your body as an object that you're building up, and you're building up these muscles, and so you're actually alienated from your body. It's like, again, the control mechanism. You're trying to make your body into something that your mind wants it to be, and so there's a separation. And I think what we're really needing to do these days is to overcome that sense of separation from life and from our body, and from ourselves, and from women, and from the planet, and from nature, and anything that goes in the direction of a more like sense of being one with, being connected to. Connection is a big, important word, I think, being connected. And so I think working out the danger is that you're just treating your body as another object that you're trying to manipulate.
When I think about embodied presence, I think about people I've met, men I've met, who are martial arts practitioners or Zen masters, or
right,
people who have a real, it's almost a kind of charisma that walks in the room when they walk in the room. They feel so in their body, so present.
Right.
You look in their eyes and they're 100% with you.
Yeah.
And I think about as a boy, you know, I wanted to be seen. I wanted to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
I wanted to be heard. I wanted to be treated like I was really there and really important.
Yeah.
And when I'm with those kinds of people, that's how I feel. It's like, wow, I really feel seen.
Right. Well, they have a lot of space. That's one thing. They have a lot of space because they're not reacting. They're not controlling. They're actually just present. And that creates a lot of space to hear and to see and to feel and to experience what's actually going on in the moment. Yeah. And I think we're all starving for that. You know, as children, we're all starving to be seen and heard and you know, known as who we are and supported for who we are. And as adults, we want that, and we need that in relationships as well.
Well, that, of course, brings up the next question. How do we get it? How do we get more presence? How do we get more embodied? How do we find that in ourselves? Because men tend to need to do something, to practice something. So what are some of the practices that develop this embodied presence you're talking about?
Well, meditation practice is always great, and the simplest kind is just mindfulness meditation, where you're actually sitting down and you're willing to not do something for a while and just accept it to be present and to follow your breath and to feel what you feel and to open to that. So that's a long story, but that's a short form of that.
But when you said feel what you feel, that's a little bit different than some of the meditation I know about, which is sort of going up to the light, going up into oneness and kind of getting out of the body.
Well, that's what I tend to call spiritual bypassing, which is where you're using spiritual practice and ideas to actually get away from something and to get above it all and to avoid and deny your humanness or your feeling life. And so that's what I call spiritual bypassing. So that's not, I mean, there could be kind of practices that are evolving transcendence, that's fine, but as long as it has to be based on some kind of embodiment, that we're not using the practices to avoid or deny or escape from anything or rise above anything.
What about walking meditation as opposed to the sitting meditation?
Walking meditation is also very good. As long as it's really a walking meditation and not just taking a walk and then having a good...
How do you define the difference? How would I know the difference?
Well, you would be paying very close attention to your bodily sensations as you walk. You know, you would feel the feet on the ground. You'd feel the movement of your feet and toes. You'd feel the sensations in your legs. You'd feel the hips moving. That's a walking meditation where you're really tuned into the sensations of the body as it moves.
I've recently taken to barefoot walking, even in the hills.
That's even better. That's great. Yeah, connecting to the earth. The more we connect to the earth, the better these days. And also, other body practices that I teach are coming into the core of the body and feeling the three centers, the belly center below the navel, and working with that and opening up to that, and then the heart center, which is, of course, in the center of the chest. And then the deep head center, which is in the center of the brain, actually. It's not the frontal cortex, not the neocortex, but the center of the brain where the pineal gland is. And those three centers line up, and they form a kind of what's called, some of them in the Eastern traditions, called the central channel. It's the core presence of the body. And all those centers have tremendous resources we can actually tap. I do a lot of work with the belly because it's so ignored in our culture. And it's so important for coming down and getting real and getting simple and getting getting direct about things. That's, the belly sense is like a just being very connected with sensation and with what's really going on, and being very direct and honest about it.
We talked about martial arts. I think of Aikido,
yeah.
Judo,
yeah.
Even karate can develop those,
right.
The belly center. But what are some other practices if a man's not interested in the martial arts?
Well, actually the very simplest practice and one of the most powerful, it's been recognized as by many teachers as the most powerful, is actually learning to breathe into the belly center. Actually letting the breath come in there. You can imagine this coming into the belly center from the earth. So the earth energy is coming up through the soles of the feet. There are acupuncture points or energy points in the feet where the energy can enter the body through the soles of the feet, comes up the legs, comes into the belly. Actually feel it coming into the belly from the earth. And actually feel it expanding the belly and actually nurturing you. And then just let it go on the out-breath. And that's actually a very powerful practice. It actually tunes up the belly. It helps us be aware of the belly. It strengthens the belly. It vitalizes the belly. So that's a very simple practice one can do.
As you're talking about this, I think about how men tend to have bellies, whereas women tend to have asses or thighs, you know,
it's
something larger. So you get the beer belly, you know,
yeah.
or the beer gut, but there's also a kind of a tradition in the Japanese realm of having a pretty solid belly. It's like
the
kind of belliness.
The word hara in Japanese, H-A-R-I, refers to a whole kind of cultural understanding of belly. They say a man of hara. It's like what we would call a mensch. You know, it's somebody who's really stable, who's really grounded, who's really present, who's really sincere, who's really available, mensch, you know, so like a man of hara. Or as children, they're taught, you know, if a child gets really kind of freaked out, they'll say, you're losing your hara, you're losing your belly, basically, right now. You know, and they have a whole vocabulary for hara, and they use all kinds of terms for how to stay in your belly and different aspects and shadings of being connected to the belly.
And in this culture, it's all about a six-pack. You know, that
right.
There's a kind of a macho quality to
right.
that kind of belly, where you're ripped, you have built up the musculature to the point where where the belly's completely flat. How does that
right.
relate?
Well, that's kind of like the hard and tough model of being a man. And, you know, there's something great about being hard. There's times we need to be hard and tough. There's no doubt about it. So it's not like I'm criticizing that. But if that's the only way we're going, it's hard and tough. Again, in the Asian traditions, you know, in Taoism, the Tao Te Ching, a book that's 5,000 years old, one of our earliest wisdom books, it said that what's hard and tough is actually more vulnerable than what's gentle and fluid. And they use the image of water wearing down rocks. So the hardest and tough things that are hard and tough are kind of more stable, and they're more easily able to be worn down by something soft like water that can flow anywhere and move and be fluid and change its shape and change its form and can go from water to steam and gas and ice. It can take all kinds of forms. And so, you know, what we're needing from men these days is a balanced kind of masculinity that includes the hard and the soft, the strong and the yielding, the gentle and the tough. And I think that's where we need to go, is a balanced masculinity.
Right. Balance seems to be equated with health, and imbalance with ill health.
Right. What's balanced is healthy, and the circulation. And circulation means we're going circulating between the poles of strong and soft. Open and firm, you know, firm and gentle, and expansion and retreat, pulling back, going out and coming back. All the moving back and forth between the poles creates a kind of circulation which creates health.
So this is a dynamic balance as opposed to a static balance.
Exactly.
Not like a teeter-totter that's still, but a teeter-board right. where you're moving a little bit to the left and a little bit to the right to stay
right,
on top
right.
of the
Which
cylinder.
Means you have to be present in order to feel what's needed at each moment. And so, you know, now I know I've gotten too hard here. I'm too tough in the situation. I need to yield. I need to listen more. I need to soften myself. I need to let in what this other person is saying. You know, and there are times when I need to get and to be hard and strong about something. So the only way we know that is not through our controlling mind, but actually by feeling it in the body. The body is an incredible sensing mechanism. It's not a mechanism. I shouldn't use that word. A sensing organism. And we can sense and know and feel in our body what's right. And that's part of becoming embodied presence, is to be actually learn to draw on the wisdom that's inherent in the body, that can actually, the feeling body, the knowing body,
when
I call the wisdom body.
Sorry, when I think about a sport that expresses that most fully, it's surfing.
Right.
Surfing, you're on the wave. The wave is moving you. So mm-hmm. that's like our circumstances that are moving us forward
right.
in time, yet we're balancing on the board, and you have to be completely present, and you have to be completely alert and knowing where your body is in relationship to the board and the wave. That seems to be a really good...
Continually adjusting from moment to moment, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a good metaphor.
We've talked about some physical practices, and we've talked about the more spiritual or embodied practice. What do you do for the mental and emotional blockages that can prevent us from being balanced?
You know, there's a certain kind of attunement to your own body on the feeling level to actually feel, well, how am I feeling right now? You know. Sometimes men are a little put off by the word feeling because it seems to be a women's territory, and women are often wanting us to talk about feelings, and it gets
right.
to be, that's one of our problems. We can't enough already. But I use the word feeling in a more general sense, but even beyond feelings with a plural, it's feeling, be able to just feel what you feel, feel your presence, feel your life, feel your openness, feel your heart, feel your guts. Feel your strength, you know, if that's what you... But actually, it's, so the body, to feel is to be alive, to feel is to live, you know, to be alive is to feel. It's a kind of openness and sensitivity and a responsiveness. It's a responsiveness, and that's where you're talking about the surfboard. The surfer is responsive at every moment to what's being presented to him.
As opposed to reactive, right?
As opposed to reactive, which is just like, I like it, I don't like it, it should be this way.
Automatic.
Yeah, it's automatic. And it's got a lot of judgment in it. So, learning to draw on our body, cultivate our body as an organism that's it's like the body knows how to do that surfing thing. The mind can't do it. The mind would be much slower. The mind would say, okay, now I should put my foot on, I should put more weight on my left foot. You know, it would
right.
be too late. You'd be. But the body has that immediate sensing. So it's like starting to draw on and cultivate our body is that sensing, knowing, feeling presence that can actually totally adjust and help us adjust and respond to what's exactly needed at each moment.
And we talked a bit before the program about beliefs, about the cognitive function that
right.
also can block us. You know, what's the way through all of those automatic mental structures that keep us in our head? How can we get
right,
underneath
right.
those?
Well, I use the word unpacking a lot. We need to unpack our beliefs. We need to see, because usually what's obstructing what I'm calling the embodied presence is either, what's usually blocking it is either some belief structure from the past, or some emotional structure from the past. Those are both from the past, the things we've developed in our conditioning. And so we need, and I teach how to unpack our experience and see what's operating, see what the beliefs are, see what the emotional reactions are, see what the habitual pattern is, and actually just make it conscious. It's the most powerful thing there is, just bring it into awareness.
How do you instruct people to do that?
Well, first of all, I usually start from what the problem is. And then we usually start from a problem. What's the glitch? And then how does that glitch feel in your body? And what's going on there. And so there's actually an asking, a sensing, and asking the body questions. You can actually ask the body a question, and actually so that's a learning process to learn how to do that, and actually learn how to listen to the response from the body. So there's that, and then in terms of the beliefs, it's useful to actually just name that this is actually a belief. It's important to make a distinction between a belief and an experience. So right now, for example, in this situation, I believe I'm bad, for example. That's a belief. I believe that there's something wrong with me. That's a belief. That's what I call a story. It's something you're making up. It's like purely mental structure. But actually, what's really going on right now when you feel like you're not worth anything? That when you believe you're not worth anything? Okay, the feeling is, I feel maybe sad, or I feel vulnerable, or I feel helpless, or, you know, that's the actual felt experience, and that actually, and when you acknowledge that, that takes us out of a belief. So the belief then starts to seem like a shell or a piece of something made out of bone, and we're more now connecting to what's really going on. So right. Be able to distinguish between stories and feelings, between beliefs and actual experiences is very important.
You do a lot of work in the realm of relationships. In fact, your most recent book is about relationships and healing the wounds of the heart. So I imagine that this particular practice is especially valuable in relationship with someone else.
Right. As a practice I have called unconditional presence, where we learn how to actually acknowledge what's going on in our experience. We acknowledge it, we meet it fully, like with our belly. And then we open to it with our heart, you know, so there's a kind of opening to our experience and being able to meet it. And that's really core practice for relationships. In a relationship, you have to be actually really, it's all about connection. So the main connection is to connecting to yourself and what's really going on, because that's how you bring yourself to the relationship, is like being connected with yourself. If you're not connected, then you can't have a relationship, because you don't have a relationship to yourself. So it's all very, very interrelated.
But can't that make you so self-focused that you become self-absorbed or narcissistic?
We could go in that direction. So that's one of the everything has its own, you know, danger. One could become obsessed with oneself and one's own feelings and experiences. But the realm of relationship is one that's always pulling you out of yourself anyway. You know, it's always pulling you out of your obsessions with yourself. You know, the other person's got a whole world going on, and you have to come out of yourself to be with it, you know.
Well, you've got a workshop and retreat coming up, a couple of them. You want to mention what they are and where they are?
Yeah, I have the first weekend in August. It was a weekend retreat at Santa Sabina Center, a beautiful place in San Rafael, California. And it's on my website, johnwellwood.com, which is John Wellwood was spelled with one L. And that's a great weekend for, we've got a whole weekend of just being in embodied presence and practicing and exploring that. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful weekend. This is my sixth year doing it, it's this particular same weekend. And then there's a week-long, even more intensive week-long on the East Coast, happening the last week in August at Omega Institute in upstate New York, Rhinebeck, New York. So it's also on my website. There's links on the website for those programs, and that's also a very wonderful, wonderful program now in its 24th year, actually.
And wow, 24 years, that's amazing. So if you would like more information from John, if you'd like to be on his mailing list, press 1 on your phone now, or if you're on the webcast, send a message using the question space, and send your email address there through the webcast, and we'll capture those emails and hand them to John for his mailing list. So again, press 1 if you're on the phone, send your email through the webcast question node, and we will hand those over to John. Or you can go to his website, John Wellwood with one L and an H in John, johnwellwood.com, and find information about it. Which of your books would you recommend to a man who really wants to learn about this, this whole field? Which one would you recommend to start with?
Now, I'm working on a book specifically on embodied presence now, which is not out yet. But I think probably my last book, Perfect Love, Imperfect Relationships, really brings a lot of it together. I have some very complete descriptions of unconditional presence and some examples of that. So that's probably the best one to look at right now. If you're interested in the area of conscious relationship, being more conscious in relationship, then Journey, I'd recommend Journey of the Heart. I'd say the Perfect Love book is more about relating to yourself and your in relationship and in your own woundedness around love, which is a big problem in most relationships.
Great. Well, let's see if there are any questions from the audience. We have a lot of people listening. If you have a question for John, please press 2 on your phone, or you can send it in through the webcast. And you can also ask questions anytime or carry on the discussion about embodied presence and about John's work on our Facebook page, The Shift Network. So press 2 if there's any questions. And Ben, are there any questions out there?
Yes, I have a question here from Sid on the webcast. I'm asking, if you are feeling fear and it impairs your function or your task, how will you function without going to the control tower?
Ah, very good question. Fear is our main issue, actually. The reason that we went into the control tower in the first place is fear, basically. And so there's a primal level of fear in our body, actually, that we need to work with. So we need to learn to cultivate and come into a relationship with fear, make a relationship with fear. I think of the problem we go into the control tower is that we're being run by fear. It's starting to overwhelm us, and we don't feel like we have the resources to handle it. Therefore, we have to disconnect and dissociate from the body and go into denial or avoidance or compensation. We try to compensate for the fear. But the main practice for fear is to actually Instead of turning away from it, to actually, and a very simple thing you can do, Sid, is to actually just take this practice very simple as a starting point, just to see what it would be like to actually turn toward the fear. What's the inner experience of turning toward the fear? So usually it's like this intense feeling, and it's like, I got to get away from it, I got to deal with it, I gotta do something else to handle it. But actually to sit and feel your belly, actually, that would be very good, to breathe into your belly first. And actually feel yourself turning in the direction of the fear, making contact with it, actually sort of looking directly at it. And then, if you go further beyond that, which would be, actually making a relationship with it, allowing it to be there, starting to open to it. Those are more advanced stages. But I think the beginning stage, the place to start, would be just starting to acknowledge it, make contact with it, feel it in your body, actually make it something you can actually hold in your experience. So that, and that takes practice, especially if it's very intense. But start with smaller fears first, and feel your belly as the ground of that. And actually, as you turn toward the fear, actually feel your belly center, feel yourself, feel your ground, feel your pelvis, feel yourself connected to the earth, all those things, and actually turn toward the fear. You can also breathe into the belly at the same time, if that helps. And
that's a great advice, and it reminds me of the advice I got decades ago, that if you're being chased in a dream, to turn toward what's chasing
you. Turn toward what's chasing you. That's always the principle. It's always to face and meet what we're running away from. Yeah.
Ben, is there another question?
Absolutely. We have Peter on the live line. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to ask about, I'm still thinking about your commentary on fear, but I wanted to ask about, I mean, there must be men in CEO positions that deal with oil companies, and I'm just wondering, are they disconnected from themselves, or like, I just feel like there's so much going on with our present culture that's harming the earth.
Absolutely.
And that we can't seem to get out of this track.
Absolutely. You know, I think our whole problem is our whole economic system is based on a disconnected mind and the whole, exploitation. And it's become what we call, sometimes called predatory capitalism now. And it's like, and so we need to change. Where do we start to make the change? The decisions that are being made by the oil company executives, for example, BP and its shoddy safety procedures allowed that blow up to happen because they didn't want to put the money into greater surveillance, and it's happening with a nuclear power plant in Japan, the same problem. You know, it wasn't taken care of because people, you know, were trying to make the profit and not spend the money to safeguard. And so we got a whole economic system built on profit, which is, you know, trying to get above nature, extract from nature all the, and funnel it all to the top. And so that, you know, the top 1% of this country owns the vast majority of the wealth. So everything's getting funneled up from the earth to the top. And so it happens in our body too. It's like the belly center, which is our base, has been eroded, and everything gets funneled up to the disconnected mind upstairs. And so, you know, this is a very big thing that we all need to work on. This is, I think, the main thing that men need to work on in developing, coming back down and connecting to the earth, and it needs to be absolutely brought into the economic realm, and we really need a revolution of an inner revolution where we can say we're not standing for this paradigm anymore of controlling and exploiting and manipulating.
And that brings us to activism, which is actually right. embodied protest or embodied complaint, you know, where instead of just sitting around and complaining, we actually put our bodies on the line and say, no more of this. I'm not going to take this anymore.
Right.
I'm going to vote you out of office. I'm going to protest in the streets until the heads, those dictators in the Middle East right now, are seeing the embodied presence of their populace saying no more. And I'm wondering when we in the United States will do that.
I think the people of the world are at some point going to have to stand up together. This is my vision anyway, of people all over the planet standing up and saying, the paradigm we're working on is no longer functional. It's toxic, and we're not putting up with it any longer. We need a complete shift.
I hope to that.
So,
we are out of time. It's been a fabulous conversation, John. Thank you.
Great.
So